24 hours of bright and beautiful music. This is KIXI, AM and FM, Seattle.
CBS News. Reagan wins in Colorado. Carter talks with yet another possible running mate in New York. I'm David Jackson reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The Democratic nominee apparent, Jimmy Carter, came to New York Saturday and after a rally and a speech in Midtown, met with another possible running mate, Washington Senator Henry Jackson. After the session, both agreed that primary wounds had healed, that no hard feelings between the two remained. Carter ruled out Saturday the possibility he will name a woman as vice presidential candidate. An earlier Carter list had mentioned Representative Barbara Jordan of Texas, but now Carter says no woman remains on his list. The issue of women's representation at future Democratic conventions was the theme of a march near New York's Madison Square Garden Saturday. Fred Graham reports.
The National Organization for Women added to its usual causes a march in support of the Democratic women. Only about a third of the delegates to this convention will be women, and they want a rule assuring them half the seats in 1980. But the Democrats were burned by quotas for women, blacks, and youth at the last convention, and the party pros have persuaded Jimmy Carter to reject the women's demand and leave the issue to the states. So despite all the hoopla and speeches, the feminist forces seem heavily outnumbered at this convention. And so to avoid a damaging defeat on the convention floor, a delegation will meet with Jimmy Carter, where in exchange for a few token concessions, they're expected to drop their demand for equal representation at the next Democratic convention. Fred Graham, CBS News, New York.
Ronald Reagan has picked up the lion's share of Colorado's 31 Republican convention delegates. He got 26 of them, compared to President Ford's 4. One remains uncommitted. The totals now show the president still leading, 1,059 to 1,033. During Reagan's speech to the Colorado convention Saturday, he was interrupted by the convention chairman. His time was up, 15 minutes. Then the chairman was reminded that President Ford's son, Jack, had spoken earlier for 24 minutes. Reagan continued. Later, in Los Angeles, Reagan commented.
It was a little upsetting. My predecessor, who spoke for the other side, was not interrupted. He spoke longer than the allotted time. He spoke longer than I did. And suddenly, the chairman was interrupting me right on the dot of what was supposed to be the allotted time.
Sunday, Reagan will be in Palm Springs, California, to attend Frank Sinatra's wedding. More after this.
Here's a chance to save money and serve a great meal. Manwich Sloppy Joe's made with free Wonder Buns. Right now, participating grocers have a special offer on Hunt's Manwich Sauce and Wonder Buns, the perfect combination for delicious Sloppy Joe's. Just buy them both, then find out how to get a package of Wonder Buns free. Wait till you discover how easy it is. Just brown your ground beef, add a can of thick tomatoey Manwich sauce, and spoon onto fresh Wonder Buns. Delicious. Look for the Wonder Buns and Manwich display. Then treat your family to Manwiches and save.
I'm Joe Rudy of the Oakland A's. All-Star action is right here when CBS Radio Sports brings you the 1976 All-Star Game Tuesday night, July 13th. Play-by-play from start to finish. Hear the exclusive radio coverage of the All-Star Game on the CBS Radio Network.
The All-Star Game, you'll hear it all. When CBS Radio Sports brings you live exclusive play-by-play radio coverage Tuesday, July 13th. It's baseball's big night of the summer. Listen wherever you are over most of these CBS Radio Network stations.
The wife of American mercenary Daniel Gerhardt reportedly said she wishes she could have seen her husband even for 5 minutes before he was executed in Angola Saturday. She is now in seclusion with her family in Maryland. President Ford called the execution of Gerhardt unjustified and unwarranted. New York's hospital workers' strike spread Saturday to include 14 nursing homes and 10 city hospitals. That, in addition to the 34 private hospitals struck since Wednesday. Now this.
This is John Cameron Swayze with the 2020 Eye Drops Report. Item, consumers are demanding more of the products they purchase these days, especially health products. Among other things, they look for a solid guarantee. Item, 2020 eye drops are the only eye drops to guarantee complete satisfaction, or your money will be refunded by simply returning the bottle. And if that's news to you, this is John Cameron Swayze reminding you to read the label and try 2020 eye drops, the guaranteed solution.
Why is it everybody talks about air pollution, but nobody does anything about it?
Are you kidding? We're doing something about it.
We are?
Sure, we're contributing to it.
Oh.
For example, burned any trash lately?
Yeah.
Well, that's a contribution.
It is?
Had your car tuned in the last year?
No.
There's another contribution.
All right, how about you? What do you contribute?
Well, listen, don't worry about me. I work for a power plant.
So?
I give it the office.
Don't contribute to air pollution this year. We've already reached our quota. This reminder from your local lung association is a matter of life and breath.
Negotiations continue in Montreal in an effort to ensure the Olympic Games get off the mark on schedule, but there's no official report of headway. The International Olympic Committee and the Canadian government are discussing Taiwan's team, whether it should march under the banner of China. Canada has diplomatic relations with Peking. In any event, members of the U.S. team headed for Montreal from Plattsburgh, New York, Saturday after getting a pep talk from President Ford. Mr. Ford wished the athletes luck. They, in return, promised to bring home as much gold as possible. Saturday evening, the President and Mrs. Ford dined with Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip aboard the royal yacht Britannia. I'm David Jackson, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI, and the time is 10:06.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall, concierge of this halfway hotel, located somewhere between reality and illusion, and convenient to both. We speak of reality and illusion as if they are two separate and distinct states. But are they? Can one exist without the other? Aren't they like pain and pleasure, love and hate, life and death? Two opposites inseparably linked together, like the two sides of the same coin? Yes, and so close are they that it's hard to tell where one begins and the other ends.
Major Morrissey, you realize you are disobeying a written order of General Wallace.
I realize that, Lieutenant. But General Wallace won't care. He'll be dead.
What?
You'll be dead, too.
Major, have you taken leave of your mind?
Tomorrow, there will be battle.
There can't be. The enemy isn't within miles.
In 8 hours, we will all be dead. We will die bravely.
Major, are you saying you can see into the future? That's impossible. Nobody can see into the future.
I can, Lieutenant. I've been there.
Our mystery drama, The Other Self, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Howard Da Silva. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
To the man who bought the Skyhawk, to the girl in the century, we're glad you like your Buicks, glad you set your spirit free.
And to the family from Ohio, to the folks up in St. Paul, nice to see you join us, nice to see you all.
Hey, that Buick Century of yours is some car.
Thanks, we like it.
Yeah, and that tie you have on is really nice.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I see you have the V6 engine. Look at all that room.
Uh-huh, isn't that something?
Uh-huh. I'll tell you something else that's something. Over 450,000 people have already bought 1976 Buicks.
I bet they're really nice people. Do you think they'd like to come over for dinner?
All 450,000 of them?
Well, I suppose we'd have to borrow some folding chairs.
Yeah, wait a minute, your mother has a car.
It's nice to see you join us. We're glad it came to be. Nice to see you join us. Glad your spirit's free.
Buick, dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Electrical appliances are extremely useful time-saving aids. But without proper precautions, they can be instruments of destruction. In fact, government statistics show that 80% of all electrical appliance accidents are due to carelessness. Underwriters Laboratories consumer safety expert Janice Farr says there's an easy way you can help avoid contributing to that 80%.
That's right. I strongly recommend that you read and heed your appliance instruction booklets. Most booklets contain valuable safety tips, such as recommending that you unplug your portable appliance from the outlet when not in use, and that you not let the cord hang over the edge of a table or counter, or touch hot surfaces.
And to be extra safe,
it's a good idea to keep your instruction booklets in a convenient place for quick and easy reference. Remember, the instruction booklet is there, so why not use it?
This has been a public service announcement from Underwriters Laboratories and this station.
The belt is about 2 feet wide and over 100 feet long. It moves slowly, and carried on it is a row of things. Well, they start off as single things, smallish, tubular, plastic things. But all along the 100 feet of slowly moving belt, there stand men and women. And each, in turn, adds something or does something, then waits about 4 seconds, and then a fresh, new thing comes by on the belt. Take Oliver Townsend, that tall blonde fellow, about two-thirds of the way down the line. Well, every 4 seconds, here's what he does. He picks up a thing, gives the rotating end of it a turn, taps it with his finger, fuses it with one touch of a special heat gun, sends it on its way, and picks up the next. And he does it to a kind of rhythm. He says, turn, tap, zap. And he does this every day for 8 hours. How does he keep from going mad? Maybe he doesn't.
Turn, tap, zap. Turn, tap, zap. Turn, tap, zap.
I don't know what else I can tell you, Dr. Heckman. Oh, excuse me. Yeah? Well, how do we stand today, Miller? No, that much, huh? Well, the overall percentage for the month is not going to be too good. Yeah, all right. We were just talking about this, Dr. Heckman. Absenteeism on the first shift is 20%. That means 1 in 5 workers did not show up.
And this is your usual pattern, Mr. Wallace?
It is getting to be our usual pattern.
These are all production line workers?
That's where we hurt.
Well, if it's any consolation, most production line workers have the same problem.
No, that doesn't help me. Orders are piling up. I can't fill them.
Why don't your employees show up?
Why? They call in sick, mostly.
Are they sick?
I guess they are. They're sick of working.
You must admit, These are dull, monotonous jobs.
So, what can I do about that?
Try to make the job exciting.
Exciting?
Well, interesting.
Interesting? Oh, good Lord.
You could, for example, vary the rhythm of the production line. Have the place painted in more interesting colors.
Dr. Heckman,
the line itself, alternated with the components, could be things like pictures, little puzzles, slogans.
Yeah, but my people have to watch what they're doing. They have to concentrate. Even music is out.
Then eliminate the jobs. Can't a machine be devised that would...
No, because those components have to be finger-tightened. You can't get a machine that can feel it or sense it.
Still, there must be people who actually thrive in this kind of work situation.
I never found any.
Is there anybody here who loves his work?
I never heard anybody say they loved the production line.
Well, they don't have to say it. There can be other testimony.
Well, like what?
Like a good record of attendance? Let's study the characteristics of those people.
Hey, wait a minute. There is one guy. The foreman was talking about him just the other day. He's been working for me 8 years. 8 years. And in all that time, he hasn't even been absent once.
Well, then, a clinical study is definitely in order.
His name is Oliver Townsend.
Turn, zap, tap. Turn, tap, zap. Turn, tap. Coffee break.
Mr. Oliver Townsend...
Yeah, that's me.
Well, my name is Wilma Hickman. May I talk with you?
Well, sure. Why?
Well, I'm a psychologist.
No kidding. I think that's great.
Why do you think it's great? Why do you think my being a psychologist is great?
Because it's better than not being a psychologist.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
It's so simple. Look. Why are you a psychologist?
Because that's always been my ambition.
Right. So wouldn't it be terrible if you didn't become a psychologist?
I see.
You think I'm crazy?
Oh, no.
Oh, don't let it bother you. Everybody thinks I'm crazy.
What do you think?
Well, 50 million Frenchmen can't be wrong.
What does that mean?
Our doughboys used to say that during World War I.
Oh.
You notice I call them doughboys. Each war has a different nickname for the American soldier.
Really?
Yeah. The British are always called Tommies. Tommy Atkins, that is. But we keep changing. In World War II, our boys were called G.I. Joe. Civil War, it was Johnny Reb and Billy Yank.
Are you interested in wars?
Yeah. My war's the Civil War.
Is it?
I could drive you nuts. Well, actually, people around here give me a nickname. Shiloh.
Shiloh?
Didn't you ever hear of the Battle of Shiloh? It was also called Pittsburgh Landing.
Oh, yes. I think I remember.
You think you remember?
Well, I'm...
I sort of made the Battle of Shiloh my life's work. Yeah, you could say that.
Why?
Why not? Some people play golf, others bowl, hunt, fish. I've got the Battle of Shiloh. Do you work here?
Well, I do for a while.
Would you like to see the Battle of Shiloh?
Where?
Over at my place. The reason I asked is you seem interested. I mean, well, most folks think I'm a nut.
Oh.
Harmless, but a nut. A lot of interesting people were at the Battle of Shiloh.
Yes, I'm sure.
The Confederates lost the best general they had next to Robert E. Lee, General Albert Sidney Johnson. They also had Beauregard and Braxton Bragg.
Is that so?
You're not really interested.
Oh, I am. I am.
Of course, you had Grant commanding the Federals and General Lew Wallace. You heard of Lew Wallace? When he came home from the war, he wrote Ben-Hur. There was another General Wallace, too. Bill Wallace.
Really?
For some reason, I feel very close to him and to that whole Indiana Corps.
Mr. Townsend, about your job.
We? I mean, They turned the tide at Shiloh.
Do you like the work you do?
Especially an outfit that was attached to them. Morrissey's Rifles.
Do you prefer it to other kinds of
work?
They
called it a brigade, but it was just an oversized company.
Tell me, what aspects of the job make it desirable?
But I've got all these soldiers, you see, made out of lead and tin. And everything's authentic. I mean, the uniforms and all.
Is it a question of being happy with your work?
I got everything and everybody lined up just the way they were that April morning in 1862. You have to see it. The line's starting up. I better get with this. Excuse me. Turn.
Cut.
Set.
Did you really mean it?
Turn.
Cut.
Set.
When you asked me to see the Battle of Shiloh?
Turn.
Cut.
Set. Sure.
When?
How about tonight?
Fine.
Turn.
Tap.
Set.
Oliver.
Evening, Aunt Clara. May I introduce...
Oliver, when you said you were bringing someone home to supper, I didn't assume it would be a lady friend.
Aunt Clara, this is...
Oh, my, she's pretty.
This is Dr. Heckman, my Aunt Clara.
Doctor... Oliver, did you bring a doctor to see me? Now there isn't a thing wrong with
me. Dr. Heckman is going to see the Battle of Shiloh.
Oh, I might have known. Oh, please, come in.
Thank you.
Now, Aunt Clara, will you entertain the doctor while I get my men set up? It'll only take a couple of minutes.
Well, won't you sit down, doctor?
Oh, please, call me Wilma.
What's a pretty girl like you doing being a doctor?
Well, I'm really a doctor of philosophy.
Well, that's even worse. When I saw you standing in the doorway, I said, oh, my, maybe now he found himself a girl and he'll come back to this life.
This life? As distinguished from which life?
Well, the crazy one he's leading now.
Oh, you mean at the factory?
No, I mean at the Battle of Shiloh.
I don't understand.
Oh, he's back there, all right. His mind, his heart. There are times when I even think... No.
Tell me.
No? You'll think I'm crazy.
There are times when you even think...
Well, I even think his body is back there.
Well, that's...
You see? You're trying not to say it. You're trying not to say that's crazy.
Well, tell me why you think so.
Well, I don't have to tell you. Look at him when he talks. Listen to what he says. You'll believe it yourself.
Well, everything's ready. Now, how much time do we have before dinner?
Well, how long's the battle gonna last?
Oh, just a couple of minutes.
Well, in that case, fire away.
Now, you see why I need the whole basement?
Well, it's... I don't know what to say. It's unbelievable.
You have to realize it's nowhere near the real thing.
These tables, end to end, but they occupy the whole floor. And the soldiers... The soldiers, there must be thousands.
It looks like a lot, but you have to remember there were over 80,000 men involved. I don't have anywhere near that.
All these pictures on the walls. Ah, I recognize General Grant... Oh, and wait, that general standing high above the battle of the table, he's also General Grant, right? How did you get that little statue to look like General Grant?
I don't know. I just bought a little statue of a horseman dressed like a Union Army general. And after a while, it began to look like Grant.
What are you telling me?
The truth. And look at the other officers. Now compare them with their pictures on the wall. That's Beauregard. And that's Buell. And Bragg, and Johnson, and Wallace.
That's fantastic. How did you get these made up?
I keep telling you. I just bought tin soldiers in Civil War uniforms. And after a while...
Wait a minute. This one here. Who's that?
Oh, that's Major Morrissey, commanding officer of Morrissey's Rifles.
That's uncanny.
What's uncanny?
This tin soldier, his face, it looks exactly like you.
Oh,
never know where these things go, do you? Now, here we have a nice, rather conservative lady psychologist trying to solve one of the most searing problems of our highly technical age, boredom. And if she's not careful, she's going to find herself dodging bullets at the Battle of Shiloh, which took place more than a century ago. Well, dig in. I'll return in a few moments with Act Two.
St. Louis, Missouri.
I live on the street with my mommy and daddy. I have a little sister, too. It's a lot of fun, most of the time. Except when my little sister takes my toys. She's yucky. Our family had a problem once, and mommy and daddy were upset with each other a lot. My mommy called the people at the Mental Health Association, and they helped us. I guess Mommy didn't know what to do, and the Mental Health Association gave us information and several places where we could go. I bet they could help anybody. Mommy said she found them in the telephone book. They were so nice. Daddy said they help people with all kinds of problems. I bet they could help you if you needed it. I wonder if they could talk to my little sister about playing with my toys.
Your Mental Health Association. People who care. People who can make a difference.
You've heard it said of certain people in certain parts of our country that they're still fighting the Civil War. Well, you'd be surprised at how many people are still fighting the Civil War, reliving it, restaging it, rethinking it. And why not? It was a war that burned deep into our national consciousness. A war we can't forget. A thoroughly, completely, uniquely American war. A complex war. A deep, brooding, and mysterious war. And like all wars, it brought out the best in us and the worst in us.
This tin soldier, the one who's supposed to be Major Morrissey, he looks exactly like you.
It's your imagination.
But anyone who can see would have to admit that...
Probably, but it's a coincidence. Now, I promised you the battle. It is dawn, Sunday morning, April the 5th. The Confederates under General Hardee move against General Prentiss's division. I made up a special soundtrack on a tape. Fighting is general and spreads all along the line. Now the gunboats come down the river. And here is where Morrissey's rifles make such an important... Wait.
What is it?
Well, cease firing.
Was something wrong?
Something? Something's terribly wrong.
What?
Morrissey's rifles. Look at them.
What about them?
In position near the riverbank. See how I've placed them?
Well, isn't that what they're supposed to be doing?
What happened to their rifles?
To their what?
Rifles.
Well, each one of them seems to have a rifle.
Those aren't the rifles they carried into the Battle of Shiloh.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Something went wrong. Aunt Clara, come in here.
Well, now what's
all this hollering about?
Aunt Clara, who's been in this room while I've been gone?
Nobody.
Now, don't say that.
Nobody ever comes into this room.
Somebody's been in here.
Now, that's impossible.
I can prove it. These soldiers, see?
What am I supposed to see?
These soldiers, they represent Morrissey's rifles.
Oh, none of that means a thing to me.
Somebody took away their rifles.
Oh, now, who'd want to do a thing like that?
Aunt Clara, has anybody...
No. And I'm no expert, but even I can tell they still have their rifles.
Oliver, why do you say they don't have their rifles?
Look at the rifles they're carrying. These were the .58 caliber U.S. model 1861s.
So?
But Morrissey's men were armed with Spencers.
Oh, but these are just tin soldiers.
They are not tin soldiers.
All right, they're lead soldiers.
They didn't go into combat with the guns they're carrying now, because if they had, the Union forces would have lost the Battle of Shiloh.
You know, dinner's just about ready.
Let me explain something to you. It was the Spencer repeating rifles that turned the tide, finally.
Well, I have no reason to doubt that.
See, these 1861s, you see, it's unbelievable how difficult they were to use. That's why I promised my men Spencers. The 1861s took a paper cartridge. You would tear the powder end open with your teeth, empty the powder down the barrel, ram the bullet down on top of it. You follow this?
You're holding me the way a snake hypnotizes a bird.
You pull the hammer halfway back, adjust your percussion cap, and then, finally, you're ready to fire. Do you realize that was the gun most men used on both sides?
Really?
Yes, but certain commanders were able to buy their men better weapons. I, that is, Morrissey, bought Spencers for the whole company.
If you'll excuse me, I don't understand.
We have just started the Battle of Shiloh, and Morrissey's men, who saved the day with their rapid-firing Spencers, are going into combat with the old muskets that can hardly get off two shots a minute.
Well, the Battle of Shiloh has been over for many years, so does it really matter what these toy soldiers carry?
Yes, it matters. The truth always matters. Now, what happened to the Spencers? These men were carrying Spencers.
Why don't we have dinner? And then maybe, like Bo Peep sheep, they'll come home again. She's a nice girl, Oliver.
Are you sure nobody came in here?
Well, the least you could have done... You could have seen her home.
Why would anybody want to come here and change those rifles? How could anybody do it?
Oh, maybe she's a little bit too intelligent for you. But you need someone with brains.
I wish you'd leave me be, Aunt Clara.
Then maybe you'd leave that production line job and go back to being an architect, which is what you studied for.
There are enough ugly buildings in this world without my adding any.
I won't say another word. Play with the soldiers, if that's all you want out of life.
Good night, Aunt Clara.
Yeah. Well, good night.
What could have happened to those rifles? What could have happened?
Have you discovered anything, Dr. Heckman?
Yes, Mr. Wallace, in a general way. I've discovered... Wallace. Now, why does your name seem so familiar?
I can't imagine. What have you discovered?
The ideal type for this job is someone with a disassociative personality.
What does that mean?
Just what you think it might. You need people who live in two worlds.
How can anybody live in two worlds?
Your face. Where have I seen your face before?
About those people who live in two worlds.
Well, most of us do it to a degree. Even you.
Me?
Don't you ever daydream?
Oh, I'm far too busy.
You mean you have no secret place where you can be somebody else?
Well,
admit it.
Do you have one?
We all have our two places. The open one in the world and the secret one that exists within ourselves. Which is more important to you? The life you lead in secret or the one everyone knows about? Don't answer that too quickly.
Well, imagination's all very well, but reality is...
Fine. Then the people you need are the ones for whom the secret place is more important. Men like Oliver Townsend. Hire people like Oliver Townsend.
Excuse me. Yeah?
Wallace, I've heard that name and I've seen that face.
What do you mean? Okay. All right, I'll talk to you later. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Heckman.
Actually, I haven't even started.
If you can't straighten this out, you may be finished.
What are you saying?
I am saying we got a guy working here named Oliver Townsend. He hasn't missed a day's work in 8 years. So you talk to him, and this morning, for the first time, he's absent.
But that's...
Things are bad enough, but...
Mr. Wallace, I'm sure there's a reasonable explanation.
Well, if there is, you had better come up with it.
What could have happened to those rifles? What happened?
Oliver? Oliver!
Oh. I guess I must have dozed off.
You've been down here all night.
All night?
Was it 7 o'clock in the morning?
I must have fallen asleep.
Well, you'd better think about getting ready for work.
Work?
I'll have breakfast right away.
No, work. I can't go this morning.
What? Oliver, you realize it's the first time in how many years?
Call in for me, Aunt Clara. Say I'm sick.
Well, I hate to lie, you know. Is there something the matter with you, Oliver?
I got a problem. The rifles. I'm having a problem with the rifles.
Yeah. Well, I'll call in and say you're sick.
What could have happened?
Whoa there.
Who goes there?
Major Morrissey.
Major? We've been waiting for you to come back.
What's wrong?
They want to take our Spencer rifles away from us.
What are you saying?
We're to trade our Spencer rifles for these standard U.S. 1861.
Who says so?
Direct order from General Wallace. There's a lieutenant from his headquarters waiting on you in your tent.
You can't have my rifles, Lieutenant.
Sir, I have the order here from General Wallace.
Those weapons are the personal property.
No, sir. When your unit was mustered into the service, your equipment became the property of the United States Army. And headquarters feels that this particular equipment can be used more effectively elsewhere.
What's today's date?
It's Saturday, April the 5th.
That's right. Tomorrow is Sunday, April the 6th.
Yeah, I would venture to say so, sir. Now, if you would sign the receipt...
No, I'm afraid I can't sign that receipt.
But, Major, you must sign.
Corporal.
Yes, sir?
Assemble a squad. Unload our Spencers from this officer's wagon.
Major Morrissey, that is insubordination. I have a written order.
Not anymore.
Corporal, in the name of General William Wallace, I order you not to...
You heard what I said, Corporal. Now get moving.
Yes, sir.
Major, surely you don't think you can get away with this.
I think I can.
The general will be down here himself the first thing tomorrow morning.
No, he won't.
Well, how can you say that?
Because by tomorrow morning, the Battle of Shiloh will have begun.
The Battle of Shiloh? What's that?
There's a little church, a little country church, a couple of miles south of here. And the folks call it Shiloh. And that'll be the center of the fighting when the rebels attack.
Major, there isn't going to be a battle tomorrow. The rebels won't attack. They're waiting for us to attack. Now, sir, so far, no harm has been done, and General Wallace needs those rifles. Now, if...
In exactly 8 hours from now, General Wallace isn't going to need anything.
He needs to distribute those Spencers among the sharpshooter platoons. It's important to him.
8 hours from now, nothing is going to be important to General Wallace.
Major, what are you saying?
What's your name, Lieutenant?
But... Butterfield, but what are you...
Butterfield. Do you have a wife, Lieutenant Butterfield? Or a girl?
Major, will you listen to reason?
Go back to your tent, Lieutenant. Write a letter to your wife or your girl. If there's something you felt you never really told her, tell her now.
Oliver?
Oh. Oh, hello. Here, let me turn it off.
Don't Don't let me interrupt anything.
No, I'd like you to see the whole thing from the beginning. I just gone to the point where General Wallace is killed.
Oh.
Yeah, you see, he was...
Wallace.
William H. Wallace.
That's where I heard the name before.
I got his picture on the wall, see? Up there.
Oliver. General Wallace, look at him. Who does he remind you of?
I don't know.
Well, the resemblance is uncanny.
I still don't know.
The face is the same and the name is the same. That could be a picture of your boss.
Mr. Wallace?
I've never seen such a likeness.
I never noticed it before.
Oh, yes, you have, Oliver. You have.
People from the past keep intertwining with people from the present. When Oliver Townsend combines himself with Major Morrissey, we may very well suspect that this might be going on in his own head. But we have a Brigadier General William H. Wallace and an industrialist named William H. Wallace, and both of them look alike. And that isn't confined to Oliver's head. That's a fact. There will be more facts for you to ponder when I return with Act 3.
Oh, will it be, Bill, soda, shaving cream, or a prescription?
It's my hemorrhoids, Mr. Edwards. Pain. Itching.
Well, most of my customers use this.
Preparation H?
Well, in many cases, Preparation H relieves occasional pain and itch for hours.
Hey, that's great.
And Preparation H actually helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissues caused by inflammation.
I'll buy that.
Doctor tested Preparation H comes in ointment or suppositories. Soothes pain and itch and actually helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissue. Now use only as directed.
Recently, I came across a little-known organization helping thousands of people with serious visual impairments such as glaucoma and macular degeneration that prevent them from leading normal lives. This is Arlene Francis speaking for the National Association for Visually Handicapped. And if you'd like to make a small donation to help their vital work, write the NAVH, Box 700, New York, 10016. Funds are badly needed, and they would really be appreciated. Thank you so much.
Hey, are you the country doctor?
Yeah.
Well, I'm the United States of America, and I need help.
Okay. What do you want me to help you on?
Well, I've got 200 years of growing pains and 200 million people.
Where'd you hit the most?
In my heart, because that's where those 200 million people live. Do you understand that?
Yeah, because you're the United States of America.
Then what's wrong with me, doctor?
Well, maybe it's because all the bad people in your heart is what makes you sick.
Gee, that sounds serious.
Yeah, because if your heart doesn't work, then nothing works.
Well, how do I cure the bad people in my heart?
Well, you could tell them to be good to each other and to love each other. And then maybe you'll feel much better.
Well, God bless America. Please?
From the Franciscans, with love.
What do we know so far? We know that there are many dissociative personalities. In other words, people who live in two worlds. The first is a world they share, more or less, with everybody. And the second is a world that is all their very own. And things go along very well for a while, but sooner or later, the worlds start to get mixed up.
Oliver, this picture of General Wallace, where did you get it?
I have a great big album. It has photographs of all the Civil War generals. They're all authentic, and I cut them out of the book and put them on the walls.
Mm-hmm. There are two worlds. You live in two worlds.
What are you saying?
You know what I'm saying. In one world, you're Oliver Townsend, a production line worker. In the other, you're Major Morrissey, commander of a Civil War rifle unit.
I wouldn't...
You won't admit it, but you keep giving it away. You keep seeing yourself as Morrissey. Now, that's true, isn't it?
Well, I...
But now, Now there's another person who seems to be common to both worlds. Wallace. In this world, he's Oliver Townsend's employer. What was General Wallace to Major Morrissey in that other world?
General Wallace? He was Morrissey's superior officer.
And what was the relationship between Wallace and Morrissey?
They had very little to do with each other.
Very little or nothing at all?
Well, it was Wallace who took away the Spences from Morrissey just before Shiloh.
Wallace took away the Spencers, yes. Oliver, tell me, why did you become interested in the Civil War?
I don't know. It just happened.
How long ago?
I was always interested, I guess.
What do you mean by always?
I may have been born interested.
Nobody is born with an interest in anything. These things are created by...
By what?
By opportunity, personality, experience.
No. A fellow becomes a nut on golfer stamps. But a nut the way I'm supposed to be a nut on Shiloh. No, you got to be born with it.
Do you mean to say you were interested in the Civil War since the day you were born?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's what I mean.
But how would you know?
Well, suddenly it seems a guy goes overboard about certain things. But the interest was always there. He may not have been aware of it. And then one day it just...
How long have you been studying the Battle of Shiloh?
A while, I guess.
And what other battles have you analyzed?
Huh? None.
Why?
Well, it's just Shiloh is so interesting.
And why are you so concerned with Morrissey's rifles?
I don't know.
And after Shiloh, where did Morrissey's rifles go?
Where? Well, they must have fought their way farther south. I never thought about it. What are you trying to say?
I don't know yet. I don't know.
Thanks. I haven't seen you around lately.
Turn, tap, zap. Turn, tap, zap. 8 hours a day.
That's how it goes.
8 hours a day. Why do you do it?
I need it.
Why do you need it?
I have to make a living. I need a job.
Why do you need this job?
It's the only one I can get.
Why aren't you designing things like buildings?
Say, where have you been?
Where have you been?
I asked you first.
In Washington.
On a job?
It was related to a job. So now, where have you been?
Here? Where else?
Part of the time. And the rest of the time?
All around.
Around Shiloh?
You know, I learned something from you.
Really?
Yeah, to keep my mouth shut.
I'm not aware that I taught you.
Yeah, you talk about those two worlds.
Mm-hmm.
The private one should be just that. Private. My trouble was I let everyone know about it.
Well, do you want to know what I was doing in Washington? I was looking up the records of the Department of the Ohio, the Union Army Corps that fought at Shiloh.
What?
I was looking for Morrissey's rifles.
Well, you could have asked me. They were attached to the 9th Indiana.
I know. And later, all records of them were lost. Why?
It was a long time ago. And not all the records survived.
Is that the reason?
Well, sure. Look, do you suppose I could see you afterwards? I have to get back to work in another minute.
Mm-hmm. Turn, tap, zap. How can you do that all day?
I don't mind it.
I suppose you do need it.
That's what I told you. I need it to support myself.
No. You need it to support your other world.
Well, now, Dr. Hickman, that's going back a long time.
Yes, I realize that, Mr. Spencer.
It must be all of 9 years. We've had a lot of young architects come and go through this office.
Oliver Townsend,
You don't remember him?
Yes, I remember him, I think. I could have personnel look it up.
Oh, thank you, but what I really need is your own human reaction to him.
As I recall, he didn't last long, maybe 6 months.
Did you fire him?
No, he quit.
Why?
Oh, now I remember. He just walked into my office one day and said, I don't think I want to be an architect.
Did he give you any reason?
Well, I asked him. I said, son, don't you like architecture? And he said, I like it, but it takes up too much of my time and energy.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Mr. Spencer.
Yeah, you're quite welcome, Doctor.
Spencer. Odd that your name should be Spencer.
Well, why is it odd? That was my father's name.
Well, there still may be a rifle called the Spencer, and it must have been named after its inventor. Are you related?
Oh, I think so, distantly. Why do you ask?
Wallace, now Spencer. No. It was Spencer and then Wallace.
I beg your pardon.
Mr. Spencer, why did you hire Oliver Townsend in the first place?
Well, he was highly recommended by one of the greatest architects in the world, the head of the department, State University, Professor Morrissey.
Morrissey.
Yes. Doctor, are you all right? Is something the matter?
Major Morrissey!
Lieutenant, you tell General Wallace if he wants my Spencer rifles, he can try to take them himself.
How did you know, Major? How did you know?
How did I know what?
That the rebels would attack. The battle's on. Now, you're to form your men by the river, close by to the ravine at Dill's Branch. Now, map coordinates 18 and 36.
I know where that is.
And you are to hold there. You've got to hold that position no matter what.
Major, last night you said they'd attack. How'd you know?
Now I can show it to you properly. Because Morrissey's men got the rifles back. You see, these are Spencer's. See how they differ from the muskets carried by the other troops?
I'm not sure I do.
Well, it's obvious. These aren't muzzle loaders. These are breech-loading repeaters. That's why General Wallace tried to take them away.
Spencer, Wallace, Morrissey. Now tell me one more thing. Why Shiloh?
Shiloh?
Every one of these names appear in your life, your real life, except Shiloh. Shiloh was a church. But what else was Shiloh?
It was a biblical town in the land of Ephraim. And there, in a beautiful temple called Shiloh, was where the priests of Eli presided over the holy sanctuary.
A temple?
Yes, a beautiful temple. One of the first of the temples. It was more than a tabernacle. It was a temple. Do you understand?
Yes.
With walls and doors and pillars. Oh, it was small, but it was magnificent. And it was my first exercise in design when I studied at the university. No one really knows what the Temple of Shiloh looked like, but I saw it so clearly. Now you must really think I'm crazy, huh?
No.
And that's how Professor Morrissey came to notice me. He was bowled over by the beauty of my design, and that's how I became his protege. But when I graduated and went to work, I found out something. The temple is always being destroyed. The temple of Shiloh.
I don't understand.
That lovely temple, the Philistines destroyed it. And when I came out into the world, I discovered that wherever you build a temple, no matter where it is, what it is, the Philistines will always desecrate or destroy it.
And that's why you're no longer an architect.
I don't want to fight the Philistines any longer.
Maybe you didn't fight them long enough.
They always win.
And is that what you're trying to do now, be killed at Shiloh?
I'm not trying to be killed.
Yes. As time goes on, the battle becomes more and more real. The Holy Temple and Morrissey, the keeper and protector, and Spencer, the practical man of building, and Wallace, who takes away initiative. You all come together at Shiloh.
I don't follow
you. Oh, yes, you do. Oliver, listen to me. You can't live in two worlds of fantasy. One must be real.
I have a real world. This one...
No. More and more, this one becomes an illusion and the other becomes the reality.
That isn't true.
Soon you'll be back there. Your life will be back there.
I don't have that much of an imagination.
It will be real. And the next time you go back to fight the Battle of Shiloh, you'll be dead. Major Morrissey died at Shiloh.
How do you know?
Because I did what you were always afraid I'd do. I looked up the records. Morrissey's rifles saved the day. But they were wiped out. After Shiloh, they no longer existed.
Boys, our orders are to hold here at the river. We will obey those orders.
Don't go back there, Oliver. Don't.
Fire the way you were trained to fire. Steady. Calmly. Pick your targets. Keep under cover.
Oliver, come back.
Wilma.
Come back, Oliver.
Goodbye, Wilma.
No, Oliver, you will be killed.
I have to go. The Philistines are attacking Shiloh.
Well, you said it, Oliver. You said it yourself. The Philistines are always attacking Shiloh.
Always attacking, always destroying. Hold tight, boys.
Oliver, come back.
Goodbye, Wilmer. Such a beautiful morning. Why do so many battles begin on a beautiful morning?
Oliver, you will die.
I'm willing to die for Shiloh.
Don't die for Shiloh. Live for Shiloh. Live for it here and now. Don't go back 100 years. Fight for it now. Here.
Wilmer.
Oliver, the Philistines are attacking here and now. Save Shiloh.
It can't be saved.
Don't quit. Fight for it here. Fight now.
Wilma, my men need me.
Those men need nothing. They're 100 years dead. We need you. Oliver, I need you. Come back.
Come back.
Come back. And build 100 Shilohs.
And he did. The temple is built so that it will be destroyed, so that it will be rebuilt again. And this is the story that is told and retold over the centuries we have seen, and as it will be retold in the times that are to come. I shall return shortly.
Wheels are ever spinning, shining spokes are catching sun.
Last year, over 15 million new bicycles were sold in the United States, and over 70 million are now in use. Studies show that the leading causes of bicycle accidents are loss of control, mechanical and structural problems, and the entanglement of foreign objects in the wheels. So, make sure your bicycle meets the new safety standard.
So cycle up America, a craftsman of being told. There's a life that is riding on every bike that's sold.
For more information, ride bicycles, Washington, D.C., 20207. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission.
Hidden place, the secret place that exists within us all, becomes a world, a second world. And sometimes we feel we can live in both worlds, the one inside and the one outside. But this isn't true, because sooner or later, we must choose. The secret world is Shiloh, and we must always decide whether we shall be the builders or the destroyers of the temple. Our cast included Howard Da Silva, Joan Lovejoy, Robert Dryden, Joan Shea, and Russell Horton. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Do you think I'd...
But 2 million bucks? Oh, yeah. So would I.
You've got it all figured out.
And I should have guessed it from the beginning. Cousin? I was slated to become the corpse to get you the insurance money.
That's very clever of you to work it all out. What are you going to do now? Yell for the police?
Oh, no, no, cousin. We're going to go ahead with your plan. But with different results.
You are going to be the dead one. Ben, stop! Stop!
I'll kill you. No,
you won't.
Ben. Ben, good Lord. I've killed him.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
This is KIXI Seattle.
CBS News. President Ford is back in Washington after a trip through the Northeast. This is David Jackson reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Thunderstorms forced cancellation of the normal helicopter ride from Andrews Air Force Base to the White House. The first family went by motorcade. Al Walker was with the president all day and files this report.
President Ford is back at the White House at this hour after visiting Queen Elizabeth in Rhode Island and bidding farewell to America's Olympic athletes in New York. President and Mrs. Ford with daughter Susan were the principal guests at a black tie dinner aboard the Royal Yacht Britannia, anchored in Newport Harbor. Among the other invited dignitaries, Vice President and Mrs. Rockefeller, Secretary of State and Mrs. Kissinger, and the Governor of Rhode Island and Mrs. Noel. The American First family was piped aboard the yacht for the final major event of the Queen's bicentennial visit, set in a picture postcard locale with a full moon framing the regal seat. But it was a private affair, and there were no toasts, no communiques, no formal stage pictures. Mr. Ford detoured on his way to Rhode Island to make a brief stop in Plattsburgh, New York. There he said farewell to the United States Olympic team as it prepared to depart for this year's games in Montreal. Hal Walker, CBS News, Washington.
Ronald Reagan closed the delegate gap with Mr. Ford this weekend. He gained 26 of Colorado's GOP convention delegates to Mr. Ford's 4. The two men are now just 26 delegates apart. More after this.
This is John Cameron Swayze with a 2020 Eye Drops report. Item, in this election year, many Americans are watching more television than ever before. And all this TV viewing can sometimes leave eyes feeling tired and red. Item, 2020 Eye Drops are the only eye drops guaranteed. Complete satisfaction is guaranteed, or your money will be refunded by simply returning the bottle. Just read the label. This is John Cameron Swayze reminding TV watchers everywhere to try 2020 Eye Drops, the guaranteed solution.
I'm Fred Lynn, center fielder for the Boston Red Sox. It's a baseball first. The first All-Star game to be played in Philadelphia's Veterans Stadium, Tuesday night, July 13th. You can be there, too, with play-by-play coverage from CBS Radio Sports.
The All-Star Game, you'll hear it all. When CBS Radio Sports brings you live, exclusive play-by-play radio coverage Tuesday, July 13th. It's baseball's big night of the summer. Listen wherever you are over most of these CBS Radio network stations.
New Jersey Congressman Peter Rodino is the next on the list of Jimmy Carter's possible vice presidential choices. Rodino and Carter will meet Sunday to talk things over. Saturday night, Carter saw Washington Senator Henry Jackson. He has also met with Senators Mondale, Glenn, and Muskie. The Democratic National Committee has chosen 34-year-old Richard White to be the youth co-chairman at the convention beginning Monday. But 19-year-old George Reedy from Mississippi thinks 34 is too old for that job. He says he'll challenge White for the post when the Rules Committee meets on Monday. Jet Propulsion Lab scientists in Pasadena, California, are mulling over some new pictures of Mars sent back by the Viking spacecraft. They may have found a better landing site just west of the original one. Project manager Jim Martin.
We expect by Tuesday night or Wednesday morning at the latest to have evaluated these pictures and to have decided whether or not we will pick a landing site in this new westerly area or go back to the site that we had picked before in the so-called Northwest Territory. So we'll make that decision on Wednesday morning. If we decide to land in the more westerly area, we should land at about 5 a.m. on Tuesday, July 20th.
Viking project manager Jim Martin. The hospital workers' strike in New York is now being called the largest in U.S. history. Some 35,000 personnel are on strike, affecting a like number of patients. The issue is money. In Trenton, Michigan, 4,400 auto workers are still off the job at a Chrysler engine plant. They're striking over health and safety issues. Westinghouse is facing labor problems as well. Three unions representing some 50,000 workers nationwide are set to go out on strike midnight Sunday. The unions rejected a company offer Saturday and said there will be no extension of the deadline unless an agreement is reached. Now this.
Are you in the market for a recreational vehicle, a camping trailer, or a spruced-up van? This is Gene King for the Council of Better Business Bureaus, reminding you that the energy crisis is still with us. The price of gasoline has gone up, and in some areas, spot shortages continue. All this makes plans for camping trips much trickier. If you decide to brave the shortages and buy a trailer, be sure you do some investigating beforehand. Be careful not to buy a recreational vehicle from a dealer who pressures you to take the vehicle off his hands. Check out the manufacturer before you buy. If the manufacturer has gone out of business, the trail or van you were thinking of buying may have no reliable supply of vital replacement parts. Incidentally, recreational vehicles may be expensive to buy these days, but they're not costly to insure. Many auto insurance companies have recently entered the motorhome market. Check with your agent and compare his rates with those of competitors.
Officials in Caracas are now saying that more than 25,000 people are homeless after a week's flooding in southwestern Venezuela. Damage estimates are put at $35 million, but it may not be over. Heavy rains continue. David Jackson, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI. The time, 11:06. All day and all night, it's bright and beautiful music on KIXI.